I know you talk about the overnight success takes what,
17 and a half years, yeah.
17 and a half years?
Yeah, okay. 10, 5, and 2 and a half.
Got it. Okay, well, I'm at 7
10, 10 years will get you to 50% of the way, 5 will get you to 75% of the way, and then 2 and a half will get you the rest of the way. Oh, no, sorry. 10 will get you to 25% of the way. Most people quit. Then the next 5 years will get you to 50%, then 2.5 years will get to 100. Things happen very slowly, then all of a sudden. Okay, sorry. I got the math right finally.
Yeah, cool. No, something that I've built an identity around, I'm a behaviorist also, is consistency, right? Like, that's something that I'm known for and I do well.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I was going for a run earlier, I guess last week, and the mind just popped, or the thought just popped in my mind, which is consistency is not enough. And that kind of like broke me. I'm like, wow, I've built my whole life around consistency. And it's kind of the argument I thought of was like, well, do we eventually plateau because we're doing the same things over and over again, where now we've reached the ceiling of like almost saturated potential, and now we need to take a new behavior in order to maximize to a new potential? Or how do you receive that idea of consistency not being enough?
Yeah, categorically, consistency is fine, but there's sub behaviors within like sleep. So when I started my consistent sleep routine, if I stuck to the exact same routine, I would not be where I am today, because now there's like the 8 sleep bed and a whole bunch of other things we've learned about sleep. And I'm constantly doing my best, learning lessons and having fun with sleep. But sleep is still a consistent behavior of mine. But the behaviors that actually represent my sleep are grown,
evolving.
So there's the distinction that you're missing when consistency is not enough, because within being consistent is the learning, doing your best, and having fun with it, which will provide you. I don't sleep the same way. I don't eat the same way. I don't spend time with my kids the same way that I did. But I've been consistent to spend a minimum of an hour with my family and friends. I just do it better now because I keep learning and trying things and technology gain and whatever. It's a good distinction. Thanks for coming.
All right. So I'm obsessed with your vulnerability. You know that. when do you, the people, something that is hard for me in my life is that people don't like how vulnerable I am. Sometimes they don't like to get close to me because they're like, oh my gosh, she's going to tell my shit too. Do you have that in your life? Do you have hard conversations with the people that are close to you to be like, look, I talk about my stuff, I won't talk about your stuff? Like, how do you handle that?
Yeah, I have it. I know with my mom passing, with my own siblings, very hard conversations that they were concerned that I would share their feelings or their actions or their like very hard, you know, conversations. You know, with my girls, it's more, you know, I think they quote, I'll quote them, "You did me dirty by posting that picture." So I have to make sure every picture they look at, because they look beautiful in every picture to me, but I'm their dad. So like, I have no idea. So anything that I post with my family, they get to check it out, because I don't want to do them dirty. But as far as vulnerability, look, I use my own judgment in my stories, and I know I change the stories to protect the innocent. Because I don't want someone to come to me and say, that wasn't yours to tell. That wasn't mine to tell. And so I'm constantly looking. I talked to my mom. Is it okay when I first started that I said that we were poor? So I wouldn't hurt her feelings.
Yeah.
Right? I had to ask, because it's not my story to tell. I could easily tell the same story in a different way without saying my mom worked 2 jobs, packed my dinner on food stamps, whatever. Because I'm sure as a mom, that when I first started, probably wasn't easy for people that are reading my books and doing that. So I only tell the stories that are mine to tell, the best of my ability, and I ask for permission when I'm not certain.
And so where do you draw that line of like, because to me, that is your story. Like, you were the one being raised by...
I could change the story if it wasn't right. So I could start working with my mom and saying, hey, would it be okay if I said this instead?
Okay.
Like the hardest one was, you know, and I waited until the person passed, but, you know, being abused as a 9-year-old, right? That's, that story is mine. And even when I was ready to tell it, I didn't want to tell it until it wasn't going to harm anybody else. Ironically, talk about frequency, true story. So I wasn't ready to really tell that story. And I was interviewing Sugar Ray Leonard, who's a close friend of mine. And he told me that he was in an interview with Todd Bridges. Todd Bridges was molested as a young boy. And he blurted out, "So was I," on national TV. And somehow I got into my story and I'm like, that's amazing, because that's happened to me when I was 9 and I've never really told anyone. And so this is when, like, there was less podcasts and mine was featured on Apple TV and my mom watched it every week. And my mom watched it and with me. And talk about frequency. My mom, I was like, "What do you think?" She goes, "That was great." She didn't hear it. She, like the same way I blacked it out when I was little, that her frequency, she did not hear it. And so I just let it be always, you know, I just let it be from there, because I was so anxious about my mom's going to hear this and she's going to feel responsible and all the things I went to therapy about that happened. She couldn't hear it. She couldn't see it. It just, the human, it protected her so much. It was crazy. Yeah.
Thank you.
You've got it. Yes, sir.
Hi. My name's Tanner.
Yes, it is.
And
he's staying in the sun and you'll match your name.
Oh, it's okay.
You'll be Tanner.
Exactly. I am Tanner. Not yet. You're going to be sunburned. That's what you're going to be.
Yeah. So I was watching one of your interviews last night on YouTube, which you have done many, I'm sure, but you were sitting in overlooking San Clemente, which I'm pretty sure you live up in that area.
Yeah.
Still live in San Clemente for 3.5 years. So beautiful. I was up there in the military. But you said something that really impacted me during that interview. There was a lot of wisdom. Couple things that I'm going to implement in my own life. And one of them was, you talked about how you prioritize just over 2+ hours a day on the things that are important. So you talk to your mom for 1 minute a day minimum. You talk to your kids 2 minutes a day minimum. Talk to your wife 30 minutes a day minimum.
Good memory.
I'm curious if you still operate by that. What made you, how'd you formulate that structure? And if you are still operating under that, how impactful would you say that is? And when did you start?
Absolutely have evolved even farther to having 12 hours of non-negotiable behavior without a doubt. And my studies of physics, quantum physics, and metaphysics and study of time relative to that, the saying, and I think Bob, I had a conversation with Bob Proctor, Cleona, and my mentor. I said, "What do you think about this? 2 minutes a day is equal to 2 hours on a Saturday." And he agreed fully. He's like, "Absolutely. With intentional behavior, 2 minutes a day is worth 2 hours on a Saturday." So that's where it evolved from. It's like, then why aren't I doing the most important things every day if it's worth so much? And putting a minimum to it and then using the circumstantial behavior to either add to the non-negotiable behavior or just do shit that was circumstantial because it was really sunny out and I wanted to go to the beach, you know, whatever it was. So this is the core, being a student in my calendar and non-negotiable behavior are the two things I can teach people that absolutely, I guarantee, quantifiably will change the human experience. All right, who's next? Not everybody at once. Thank you, Cleona.
So Bob taught us, and then we heard a lady today talk about when we have to match the frequency of our desire. And what I'm learning from you is in order to match the frequency, we have to stop interfering with it. Stop. But how else can someone match the frequency of their desire?
Great question. So surrounding ourselves with the frequency. People, places, things, situations, events, that when we elevate our own awareness and become conscious about, hey, this frequency is not aligned with this coinciding. And so you see this when kids come back from college and all of a sudden they're not friends with their friends they grew up with. It's all the same frequency. It's a frequency-based thing. They don't feel the same because they put themselves into a position to accelerate and advance their frequency, their vibration, and now they're back in the same situation, same house, the same people, and they haven't, and so they feel separate from it. Same as with anything else, that you'll feel separate from it if you're not constantly elevating your awareness that this isn't aligned with my frequency of where I want to or what I want to become. That's why, you know, I don't believe you're the aggregate of the five people you spend the most time with. I don't. I believe you have to be intentional about subject matter, topic, and expertise teams that you want to play on. And within the context of those teams, whatever the prioritized subject matter, topics, or expertises are, that you want to have people that can give you directions to where you want to be, and you can give directions to where they want to be. And some teams you can play different positions on, but you have to be intentional about that. That's a frequency-based philosophy that took Bob's understanding to a different level. One of the areas that Bob and I, and I think he came around to believe me, Bob used to say, you need to say exactly what you wanted by the exact time. So you say, I want $1.2, $3, $5, $6 million by December 31st at 10:15 p.m. And I told him, I believe that creates resistance. Like, I believe that you're much better off saying, I want to double the amount of money I want to make as fast as I can. And it's all linear time based, that if I told you right now that I want to make $1 million by the end of the month, well, because things aggregate, accelerate, and compound, that in the whole, it'll take 90% of the time to get to 25%, 5% to get to 50% of the way there, and then the last 5% won't happen for the last 50%, it would just create resistance because for the first week, I may have only made like $10. And then all of a sudden, I'm going to want to quit. I'm like, how am I ever going to get to $1 million if I'm only at $10? Well, if it starts doubling every day, you'll probably get there. Right? But most people quit. And so I try to get people out of that realm of, look, I want you to know your divine direction, but you're not intelligent enough in the human experience to know the exact days, times, and amounts. That's why, like, the intuits, the future tellers, they don't get it right because they're not on man-made constructive time. This is going to, they could be seeing multi-universes because there's infinite possibility. So when they're saying, oh, there's going to be the next great flood on Christmas, that's already happened. But the chances that it's going to happen this year at this time are very slim. If you understand quantum, study physics and metaphysics, and time, it gives me great security when I hear people that tell me about these things that are happening in the future. I'm like, it's already happened. So yeah, but probably not in this linear field that we're in, but you have to have faith and scientific understanding to even fathom that my philosophy is right or wrong, or I don't know what I don't know. But it's interesting to get rid of the insecurities that happen when people predict things. I predict what I want or better. That's as simple as I could put it. I predict for me what I want or better, not a grand flood on Christmas. I'm going to be in the Galapagos Islands having an amazing time with no flood. So that's what I predict for me. All right.
Thank you. I just watched an interview with John Cena.
Yeah.
And they did a surprise thing for the Oscars. And in his interview, he was like, I realized that I had to miss out on the fun to make the surprise happen. And I feel like that's a lot of like leaders, like we have to miss out on a lot of the fun or like the things that we originally enjoyed to actually make the thing happen. I know you've created a way to
enjoy.
Yeah. What is something like, how could someone who hasn't quite figured out how to do that learn how to do that? Because I know that it can be really overwhelming really quickly.
Yeah, first of all, we don't sacrifice. So many people are like, I sacrificed so much to get here. No, you didn't. You invested in yourself to get here. There's a big difference in the meaning that you give your activities if you're investing compared to if you're sacrificing. It's just a meaning shift. Same activity, two jobs, sleeping in my car. I'm investing in my new business. by working two jobs and sleeping in my car compared to I'm sacrificing so much because I have two jobs. See the difference? Same activity, different meaning. And so for me, to be able to learn to love what I don't like or love about what I love. I love this new business. I don't like or love sleeping in my car. I don't like or love working two jobs. I don't like or love the fact that I can't go out with my friends and drink when I'm 20-something because I've chosen to invest in this by doing this. Right? There's FOMO and FOPO, fear of missing out, fear of other people's opinion. Both of those will create a dynamic within the context of meaning all the time to young people. They have a fear of missing out and the fear of other people's opinion. I teach them to have JOPO and JOMO, joy of other people's opinion and the joy of missing out. Can't tell you how many times I said, I'm glad I did not go out with those people after dinner. Went home, went to sleep, feel great. It's just like working out. I would do it every morning, minimum of an hour. So many times I'm like, talk about enhancement of your rule. I'll wake up and go, I do not want to do it. Like I'm on the road, some, you know, home to suite, shitty gym. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to do this. And then I'll invoke the Michael Jordan rule. Would you meet Michael Jordan down in that gym to go work out? I'm like, yes. So get out of bed. Even though Michael Jordan's not going to be there, if you do it because he's there, then do it because you want to live a long, healthy, happy life. And then I work out. I've never finished tons of workouts I've started saying I don't want to do this. Never have finished one workout that I said, man, I wish I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Never. But tons I've started don't want to do this. Yeah. All right, we have time for one more, Nick.
Yeah.
One more. All right, who's the lucky cat? Anybody?
I'll take it.
All right.
Yogi.
So I just want to say I am eternally grateful to you. Last year, I got introduced to you. And I was just retiring. My life had taken a very interesting shift. From the military. And I let life be. Without holding on to it or trying to curtail it or letting it dictate where it needed to go. And I have been propelled into heights that I never even considered. I've experienced a lot of beautiful things. And I want to tell you that you were part of that journey. So thank you.
Thank you. That's awesome.
Aww.
Thank you. I love you guys.